Been attuned to our monthly look at critical thinking on Big Picture Science Skeptic Check. This episode, Science Breaking Bad. If you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science episodes, well, you'll find them in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because you have laboratory evidence that earbuds can cause excessive wax buildup, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
If you listen to our show via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review on our iTunes page.
And to reach us directly with your comments, throw in some faint praise, and then email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
Skeptic Check is brought to you thanks to a generous grant from the Trimberger Family Foundation. At the Trimberger Family Foundation, we hold that skepticism is a lamp that lights the way to truth. Trimberger.org.
WHFR, Dearborn.
The scientific method is our gold standard for understanding the workings of nature.
The humans who apply it, however, are, well, human.
Consider the pressure to not just publish or perish, but to publish in the most elite scientific journals.
And the concern is that if you don't have an astonishing, astounding finding, you'll tweak your data to make it look better than it is in order to get in one of those journals.
No matter how astonishing scientific innovation seems to be, it doesn't always result in progress.
One doctor seized on a supposed cure for mental illness nearly a century ago and made brutal frontal lobotomies routine.
No anesthesia, no sterilization, and it took about 6 or 7 minutes.
Stories of science gone off the rails and how even good science can be mangled by politicians eager to win votes.
It's our monthly look at critical thinking on Big Picture Science, Skeptic Check, Science Breaking Bad.
Welcome to Foodies on the Fifth, the show about all things culinary with an emphasis on the Henry Ford Culinary Program. The views and opinions expressed on Foodies on the Fifth are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Hi, I'm your host, Lynn, and today we're discussing new and exciting things going on in HFC Culinary with Chef Joseph Cosenza. Chef Cosenza, thank you so much for being here today with Foodies on the Fifth.
Hi, Lynn. Thanks for having me.
And let's get started with you.
Okay. I've been a full-time instructor here at Henry Ford for the last 5 years. I am the chef de cuisine for the restaurant for 5101, as well as our food truck, which is all based on wellness. In my 5 years here, we've done a lot to change kind of the perception of the food. We've made the restaurant a little less formal, but we've also removed a lot of the extra fats and oils in the food, and we're starting to use some more modern techniques in our cooking and introduce the students to some little bit more fine dining technique, I guess you could call it, or using tools of refinement is what I like to call it.
Okay. Let's go back way to the beginning. Explain your title.
Chef de cuisine means I'm responsible for all the food that is produced for the restaurant and for the food truck. So I make sure on a daily basis that the food is seasoned correctly, that it's prepared correctly, that we have enough, and that we're able to maintain quality standards throughout the entire week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so much of what's going on in 5101, I'm always saying great things about 5101.
Thank you.
So much of what's going on in 5101 is the homemade dressings and the breads. And, I mean, everything's from scratch, and it shows. It's...
Well, I think that's the biggest thing that we're able to do that a lot of culinary schools have been really have found really difficult, and that is tailoring learning objectives specifically to a production environment. So what that means is we're able to produce food and sell everything that a student makes, as opposed to them standing at a table, everybody making velouté and then taking it, putting it into a bucket, and then maybe using it for something. Every single thing that the students go through and all the food that they cook is sold in one of our outlets. So if it's breads, it's going to go into the bread baskets into the restaurant, or it might be a sandwich bread for one of our food truck items, or it may go to one of the bake sales before Easter and right before Thanksgiving.
Okay. Now go back and talk about the food truck. If people haven't heard of it,
okay.
It is
so
wonderful.
We have, over the last 5 years, developed what we call a wellness cuisine food truck. And because it's inside of our building here at the Student Center, we can't actually have a truck. So what we did was we took a Queen Mary and we wrapped it in poster board and we turned it into a truck that we wheel out every single day. And we got a little red light that flashes on it like an ambulance. And what we do is we take six different menus and we rotate those menus twice throughout the semester. And each one of those is based on a region. So we do Tex-Mex, we do Modern Comfort, we do Italian, we do Arabic, we do Asian, and we do California. And each one of those menus, we take the ingredients and we look at the menu items and we find ways to make them healthier than they would be otherwise. So we use things like turkey, we use things instead of pork, we'll use smoked turkey, we'll remove some of the carbs from a meatloaf, we'll reduce some of the beef in that, add 50% ground white chicken, we'll use oats instead of bread, we use tomato sauce or tomato juice instead of milk to make our binding for it. So we're always looking at different ways to keep it low fat, low carb, high fiber, high protein.
Okay. What is Modern Comfort?
Modern Comfort is kind of our take on our healthy take on Southern foods. So we do a meatloaf, we do an unfried chicken, where we actually take chicken leg and thigh quarters, we'll dip them in yogurt, seasoned panko breadcrumb, and we bake it instead of deep frying it so that it's just a very simple twist that we add to it so that it makes it less fat and more healthy. We also have collard greens, mac and cheese. On the mac and cheese, what we do is we remove half the pasta. We add white beans and broccoli to it to increase the fiber and increase the protein on it so that it, again, it's a little bit healthier. We still use full whole milk and lots of cheese, but we take some of the carbs out of it by removing some of the pasta.
I've read about modified milk, if you will, the 2%. People run around saying, "Oh, I'm very healthy. I'm drinking 2% milk." And when the fat is extracted, there's other stuff that's extracted, and then they end up putting milk solids back in. So yeah, you have less fat, but you don't have the milk the way it came out of the cow. And that's not necessarily a good thing. So the whole milk is a better idea.
Yeah, I think what we're finding now is there's a reluctance to eat as much processed food as there had been over the last, say, 30 years. And what we've found is that the more we've processed food to make it quote-unquote healthy, the less healthy we've actually made it.
Exactly.
We spend a lot of time not just in the kitchen, but in the classroom, discussing that with the students and trying to help them understand that, you know, food that is ripened on the vine and picked at its seasonal best is going to be better, and you have to do less to it than it is if, you know, I were to go buy tomatoes right now. It's still really early in the spring, and tomatoes aren't going to be very good. However, in late August, early September, tomatoes are going to be beautiful, especially here in Michigan. And, you know, I'll do a lot with tomatoes. However, now I'll stay away from them. We're getting a lot of peas and a lot of asparagus. We're starting to see different varieties in the local groceries as well of asparagus and onions and peas. So I think the grocers have started to recognize the difference, and they're starting to try to help provide a lot of those seasonal ingredients because the public wants it. and they're going to lose a lot of market share if they don't do it.
Well, I've noticed that a lot of chain grocers that had kind of a sad produce area in the past now are offering both an organic section and a regular section, if you will. And it's gotten to the point where a lot of the organic is maybe 10, 20 cents per pound more. That's not a lot.
No, we're lucky that because there's such a higher demand for it now, organic food isn't just for, I don't know, for lack of a better phrase, the upper class. Because for a long time, organic food was really expensive, and it didn't make sense to a lot of the chefs and a lot of the people that I spoke to why organic food would be so much more expensive and why we were excluding certain classes of people from actually being able to eat healthy, not just on the organic side, but on the produce side as a whole. You can get more calories per dollar in the junk food aisle than you can in the produce aisle. And there seems to be, at least from my perspective, something that's really backwards in that theory. You know, we try to teach our kids to make really good, healthy decisions when it comes to food. But if it's price prohibitive, how are they going to make that decision?
Right, exactly. I do a food segment at 1 o'clock on No Boys Allowed on Saturdays. And one of the things that I repeat until people are tired of hearing it is that it's not okay to get your dinner from a gas station.
No, it's really not. I know there are some gas stations out there that are serving sushi. Probably not your best bet for sushi.
I don't know that I'm going to trust that.
But it's hard because so many kids grow up and they don't have somebody cooking all the time, whether it's because parents are working two different jobs or it's, you know, whatever reason. There's so many different extracurricular activities that it disallows families to actually sit down during the week and eat. I was fortunate enough that every single night there was food on the table that was prepared by my mom or my dad, whoever was home. And it was ingrained in them through my grandparents and watching them cook. And we do the same things at home now. We would much rather stay home and cook for the kids as opposed to going out to dinner. You know, there's not a lot of options out there for kids when it comes to going out and actually getting a really good meal. So we stay home and we do the same things. We'll make burgers, we'll make hot dogs, we'll make pizza. And instead of having to go out and buy it and taking a bite of it and saying, oh, you know, this is okay, we're controlling the whole process because we're making the dough, we're making the pasta noodles, we're doing all of those things. And I'm not home, you know, all day long, but we find that time to do it, or we'll prepare in advance. We'll spend, you know, maybe Sunday, most of the day Sunday, prepping food for the week so that what we're doing is maybe just cooking off a steak or cooking off some chicken, and then we do broccoli and brown rice and make sure that the kids are eating healthy. And when they're a part of it and they actually help in the prep, they get more interested in actually wanting to eat the food.
Right.
And then there's less argument about, oh, well, I don't like this. Well, you didn't taste it. So at least in my kids, when they help cook it, they're really excited about eating it. It's a lot of fun to see.
Do you try any of the other burgers where it might be a turkey burger or it might be a black bean burger or something like that?
We have a chicken burger here on our food truck on our California menu that is one of the best chicken burgers I've ever had.
Okay.
And what we do with it is we load it with mushroom duxelle. So we'll take mushrooms and mince them up real fine, and we'll sweat them down with some shallots and lots of fresh herbs and cook that down to all the moisture is out of it. And we actually use the mushroom as part of the burger so that it helps create some moisture where we can keep all that lean ground chicken in the burger without having to add any extra fat. So I love that chicken burger. I've made it a couple of times at home and the kids really love it too. So yeah, it gets challenging though, because a burger really truly needs some fat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've actually made burgers last night, and we used 80-20 ground beef, and we were laughing because it was so fatty and so rich and so delicious, and we were talking about how my mom used to bring home, like, ground sirloin, and it was 90-10, and my brothers asked, well, how come your burgers are so much better? And I said, because they have fat in them. They're delicious this way.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Well, there's a difference between good fats and bad fats too, and when you're getting that fat from the beef, your body knows what to do with it. When you put some kind of trans fat in there, some sort of margarine-ish type product, your body has no clue what to do with it. So, yeah, load on the fat. I read an article not too long ago about how good fats are for the brain.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't know when we got so scared of butter and when we got so scared of milk fat solids, you know, beef fat, chicken fat, you know, your body can process it. I mean, I'm not saying go out and eat pounds and pounds and pounds of fat. That's not going to do anyone any good. But, you know, having it in moderation, you know, I love whole butter on my toast. There's nothing better than beautiful unsalted butter with a little bit of sea salt on my toast. I'm just a happy guy.
Okay.
I could eat butter sandwiches all day long. You know, but I choose not to. I love olive oil. We started using a little bit of coconut oil to cook with. Mm-hmm. We've used a little bit of avocado oil now to cook with, just to see how they react in saute pans. We're doing this at home. We're starting to do a little bit of it here at the college too. But you know, there's a lot of them out there, and they're really healthy and they're really good for you. And it really helps when, you know, we start to see a lot of PR about this stuff, and people are taking it in the right directions.
Exactly. A number of years ago, it was back when get rid of all the fat, you know, get rid of all of it, and people were dying of heart attacks at a higher rate, especially men, dying at a higher heart attack rate because they were eating trans fats, and your body doesn't know how to handle that, number one. And number two, don't touch avocados. Stay away from coconut. And I could never make it make sense in my brain, because avocados are, they are what they are. They come off the tree a certain way, and it's like saying apples are bad. And, you know, and then coconut the same way. Why this perfect thing that comes off of a tree, and you break it open, you drink part of it, you eat part of it, how can that be bad? And now we're finding it's not.
I think some of it might have been because they're not indigenous to our area.
Maybe.
We get a little bit nervous about some of the ingredients that are introduced to us. For a long time, I was avocado phobic, and that's when I was younger, and I'd never had the experience of tasting an avocado. But once I tasted it, they're amazing. I love avocado. I eat one a day. But, you know, now with avocados, it's going to be a little bit difficult this summer because the supply has dropped dramatically, and we're going to start to see prices really increase with avocados. So get them while they're still pretty cheap, but we're going to start to see prices go up here soon. Coconuts, on the other hand, most of my friends and my students will tell you I'm not the biggest fan of coconut. I've learned to appreciate it.
Okay.
But, you know, I tried drinking coconut water. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine had asked me about that, and I was like, oh, let's taste it. And I tasted it, and it has a little bit of a slight taste to it. I guess there's some nutritional value to it. I'm not really sure, but I mean, I'm just drinking straight water today, and that's the best way for me to go.
Oh, I'm chuckling because I had an instructor a couple years ago, and this was at a very healthy type institution. It was a very health-oriented class, and she, on the other hand, didn't try a lot of things that I kind of take for granted, and the other students did too. And she said, somebody gave me a bottle of coconut water. And I don't know what brand, I don't know anything about it, but somebody had given her coconut water. She knew that it was relatively expensive, all things considered, and so she felt she should drink it. And then she paused and she said, but it tastes like dirt.
Well, I think a lot of that comes with what you're exposed to when you're a kid. You know, if you're just set a whole fish in front of you and you're 10 years old and that's what's for dinner and nobody makes a big deal about it, but the parents put it on the plate and the kid eats it, that's probably more powerful than anything else. It's exposing the kids to all different kinds of foods, mm-hmm. and not just fast food.
Exactly. There is a large chain, and the only thing I'll buy is unsweetened iced tea. Mm-hmm. and I can get that through a drive-thru, which makes life easy. And they use purified water. So that's all good, but that's as far as I go on the menu.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we just got to keep kind of fighting the good fight, I suppose. We're lucky that, you know, I've been spending a lot of time down in Eastern Market, and we've just finished a affinity partnership with our department at the college and Eastern Market. And what we're going to be doing down there is we're going to start to do cooking demos in sheds 2, 3, and 5 throughout the summer on Saturday mornings. And that's really important for us because it's going to allow us to bring the students down there, and they're actually going to have the opportunity to meet some of these growers and meet some of these farmers and give them the opportunity to talk to them and understand what they're truly doing out there and why, you know, Eastern Market is going to be so important moving forward. Some of the people that work there that I'm working with have told me that it's going to be their biggest year ever down there this year. We were down there on Saturday morning just to kind of check it out, and it was packed. There were just people from all over, just everywhere. You could hardly walk through it. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that that flower day on Sunday got rained out. But it was amazing to see how many people are down there and how many people are using the market to their advantage. It's great for the city. It's great for our industry because you start to see people who are in the industry as well down there, you know, whether they're chefs or front of the house managers, talking to the farmers, trying to find out what products are going to be in season, what they can get, what's being grown here, how much they can get of it to use in the restaurants. And we're starting to see a lot of these local restaurants now that are highlighting and talking about the farms that they're using on their menus and which ingredients are on there. And we're starting to see a really quick change of menus where you might see a menu online today, you go in on Friday, and that menu is entirely different based on the availability of ingredients.
Right, right. There's a local restaurant that actually has a big blackboard, and this is in Dearborn, has a big blackboard on the wall, and they'll tell you where things come from.
Nice.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's gotten really big. So I moved back to Detroit going on 12 years now. And I was in Chicago prior to this, and one of the chefs that I had worked for had helped start the Green City Market, which is a large farmer's market inside Lincoln Park, inside the city, just outside the Lincoln Park Zoo. And to see what it was back then with maybe 15, 20 vendors to over a couple of hundred now is just an incredible sight. And seeing the same things happening down at Eastern Market, you know, with some of the local chefs down there, it's refreshing to see because we're starting to get away from processed foods. The popularity of these restaurants, it really speaks to the people of Detroit wanting that kind of food. They want fresh. They want seasonal. They want things that are local.
And let's talk about prices. It's very hard to beat Eastern Market prices too when you're dealing directly with the farmer.
Yeah, we don't have to pay for shipping, you know. So that's the big thing when the farms are bringing stuff in and they're only traveling 30, 40 miles. It's an entirely different price point than it is if they're traveling 2, 3, 400 miles, even 1500 miles sometimes. You know, so it's important. We do have a short growing season in Michigan, but as we've seen with, you know, some of these TV shows, now people are starting to get back into canning and preserving and doing all the things that I used to watch my grandparents do. And as that starts to get more popular, I think what we'll see is people getting back to the way things used to be and moving away from processed food, moving away from, you know, going into the grocery and seeing that perfect pork chop in that cellophane wrapper, and understanding that food can be ugly too, and it probably tastes just the same, if not better, because it's not traveling as far. It's picked when it's ripe.
Right.
You know, we got into an argument with a friend of mine because they had peaches, and they were hard as baseballs.
Okay.
And they were sitting on the counter, and said, "Oh, I'll just leave them on the counter; they'll ripen." And I'm like, "No, they're going to rot before they ripen." They said, "Well, what do you said?" I said, "Because you took them off the tree. They lost its life source. It can't get any riper than it is, and it's not ripe at all." So we'll get there. It's going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of patience. It's going to take a lot of people. And that's, I think, what our goal here is at the college, is to develop some culinary depth. We have some great chefs out there. And what we need to do now is start to backfill those chefs with great cooks that can come in and support the chefs, mm-hmm. support the sous chefs, and be able to produce the same quality of food that the chef is producing on the days that he's not there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know,
consistency is really important. And now that I'm in education, which I kind of fell backwards into, I've come to realize that influencing the culinary scene in Detroit is a little bit more profound for me than it was, 8 years ago when I thought, oh, I'll just open a restaurant and be able to, put my influence and my stamp on it with my restaurant. Mm-hmm. Now I'm really touching the lives of students and making sure that we're getting people truly prepared to go out into the workforce and help these chefs and help develop the culinary scene here, because without the entry-level line cooks and the middle-level line cooks and the lead line cooks and the sous chefs, the chefs can't produce what they want to produce. And
exactly.
We have to make sure that they're trained properly and that they have a baseline understanding. There's been an argument lately, and I'm not sure where it stemmed from, but a lot of people are coming out and talking against culinary school. And saying that, oh, well, you know what, you don't have to go to culinary school. I can teach you. I'm the chef. I can teach you, and I can pay you at the same time. And that's all well and good, but, there's been a huge shift in our industry, and there's no longer there's a small place still for the uneducated cook, but there's a larger demand now for an educated chef and an mm-hmm. educated cook mm-hmm. because a lot of these restaurant owners, they don't have the time to, manage the kitchen from a numbers perspective. And that's part of what we do, is we not only teach these students how to cook and the basics of classic cuisine, we're teaching them how to manage the business as well. We're teaching them how to properly purchase, how to properly manage from a supervisory role, how to manage cost control and understand what food cost means and why it's so vital to their survival as a chef and as a restaurant.
All right. Maybe this is a good time to talk about the new degree program at Henry Ford. And about 2 years ago, the name changed from Henry Ford Community College to Henry Ford College. And I understand we had two grads?
We actually had four.
Four grads, okay.
Four grads. So we introduced a Bachelor of Science in Culinary Arts. And the way we tailored it is really, truly a hardcore education in hospitality management. So they're not just getting the hands-on education, but they're also getting the business side of it. But then because it is a bachelor's degree, they're going in and they're taking classes like accounting. They're doing a science lab. They're required to take a foreign language class. So it's a pretty robust program, and we were really fortunate to have four very dedicated, very headstrong, and very smart students push as hard as they could and be able to graduate this past May with a Bachelor of Science in Culinary Arts. And what an amazing experience to be the first four people to graduate from a program.
Definitely.
I was just thinking about that the other day, and that's incredible. I thought it was really cool to be a part of designing the curriculum and being able to have an influence on how these students learn and what mm-hmm. these students learn, but
right.
to really push through that whole program and be able to come out of it on the other side of it and have their name listed as the first four people is pretty profound. And hopefully they're as proud of themselves as I am of them, because I know they've been through a lot, especially dealing with me in the classroom and in the kitchen. I can be pretty challenging, and we make sure that we challenge them as much as we can. But they've really done great, and we expect big things from them. So.
Right, right. Well, the world is not an easy place, so the reality is you have to be able to step up to those challenges.
Well, the nice thing is we have a group of students here that are studying to be something.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're studying to be something, we treat them both as students as an and as employees. So we're teaching employability skills as well as you know, trade skills. So we're teaching them how to cook, but we're also reminding them every single day, are you in your uniform? Is it clean? Did you show up on time? You know, are you practicing safe food handling skills? Mm-hmm. You know, all of those things go into a daily evaluation every single day that they're in the lab, mm-hmm. and they have to evaluate themselves. And a lot of times, you know, you get one or two students that will give themselves full points, and you look at them and you say, but you were an hour and a half late today. And they look at you and they're, oh yeah, sorry, chef, I forgot.
Fingernails don't look so great.
Yeah, so, you know, we want to make sure that when they walk out of here, they're not just prepared to cook, but they're prepared for life too, you know. Mm-hmm. We understand that not every one of our students is going to go on and become a world famous chef or even stay in the industry. Mm-hmm. But if we can prepare them better for life and help them make better decisions about food and how they take care of themselves personally, we're still doing good.
When you walk into any food service environment, you see a ServSafe certificate that someone on, at least one person on premises has to have that accreditation. How do you address those sanitation issues?
We require every one of our students to pass a ServSafe exam. So they have to do it within their first two semesters or else they cannot progress through the department. So for that to happen, you know, we're stressing that quite a bit. We are very focused on sanitation and food mm-hmm. safety every single day, whether it's a chef, a porter, or a student. Everyone is practicing safe food handling skills yeah. inside the kitchen. So we're teaching it, but we're also practicing it.
Okay. So do you guide them through for them to take the test, or?
We do. We have a class. It's an 8-week class where they study the actual ServSafe book.
Right.
And then they take the actual ServSafe exam. And so it's a class, and they get a separate grade from the score of their test. So they can pass the class but fail the test, and they have an opportunity to sure. retake the test, obviously. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to make sure that all of our students are aware of where they need to be with food sanitation. The other thing we do every single semester, no matter how many semesters you've been here, if you're taking a lab class, you have to take what we call the safety test. And that's not just about safe food handling. It's also about how you manage yourself and handle yourself in a kitchen. You know, how to carry a knife, whether a sharp knife or a dull knife is safer. You know, staying behind when you walk past someone, understanding that a wet towel is going to conduct heat. You know, all these little things that, you know, may seem like common sense to a seasoned person in a kitchen that student may not know, may not realize, or when they're busy, may not think about.
Sure, yeah. And there are things that happen in a kitchen constantly that are not in the book.
Yeah, it's not the safest environment in the world to be in, but it is a lot of fun. We try to keep things light. We try to make sure that we are hard on standards, but easy on the student. You know, we if I say that something is burnt or it's not cooked properly, it's not because you're a bad person.
Right.
It's just, you know what, this isn't right. We're going to fix it. You're still a good person. So we try to be hard on the standard, easy on the person.
Right.
And that's done really well for us. We've seen a great uptick in our business at the restaurant. We're always happy to see all of our regulars and people coming back all the time. We are in a period of transition here, which has been big. You know, our old chef, Chef Teeple, when he retired, there was a big transition with me coming in, and I knew I had some very big shoes to fill, and I think I'm doing okay with it. I see him every once in a while, and he just keeps patting me on the back and say, keep going.
Yeah.
But we are really fortunate that we are going through some changes at the department now. We're going to have some new equipment coming in. We're going to have a rotisserie that's going to be fired by wood as well as by infrared. We're going to have a hearth oven on the front on our line now, so we'll be able to do some really nice breads, so a little bit more rustic food. We're actually taking down one of the walls that separates the dining room from the kitchen, and we're putting up a fireproof plexiglass so that our guests will now be able to see the students cooking in the kitchen.
Oh.
Which is going to be really neat. It's going to be interesting. I think if my students or some of my students are listening, they're probably laughing right now thinking, yeah, you better calm down, chef. But it's going to be a lot of fun. We're and this may rattle some cages, it may not, but we are getting rid of our salad bar. It's a little bit, I kind of feel both ways about it. I understand why people like it. It's an institution, but it gives our students some opportunities to look at composed salads and do some different things with salads. It's going to give us an opportunity to be able to create a little bit more fun in the food, in that we're going to be able to do some middle courses and some tasting menus and do some different things so that we can course out different menus.
Okay.
And so we'll see how it goes. We'll take some growing pains here in the next year or two, but we're really excited. We changed our static menu last August, so that was big because that menu was about the same for about 10 years. And we changed that over, and we got some great feedback from it. So we're really excited to take a look at what we thought went right, what we thought we could improve on, and make that menu change a little bit easier. We will run again in the fall. We'll run another 11 to 12 different menus in the restaurant. We will run the 6 different menus out on the food truck. We'll have our 2 buffets, holiday buffet and Oktoberfest in the fall. We'll do our scholarship dinner, which is always exciting. We did our scholarship dinner this past semester. Was one of our biggest ones to date. We celebrated Chef Jablonski's CPEC, which is CEPC. Gotta make sure I get that right. He'll be breathing down my neck if I see him after this. So he is a certified executive pastry chef through the American Culinary Federation, and he worked really hard last summer to achieve that, and we wanted to honor him and his hard work, so we created a really nice 8-course menu where each course incorporated a pastry element into it. It was a lot of fun. It was a big challenge for me to do because I'm not the biggest fan of certain of pastry chefs. You know, we've got our own ways in the kitchen, but it was hard. It was challenging, and we had a lot of fun with it. So one of the courses that we did was we took coconut cream pie and turned it into a soup.
Oh.
Which was a lot of fun. And then we did, we made a pairing of lobster and chocolate. And a lot of people were really skeptical about that course. And it actually ended up being one of the best courses on the menu.
It's kind of mole.
Kind of, yep. Yeah. So we did figs, a little bit of red wine, a little bit of port, chocolate, and a little bit of ground coffee in the sauce. So we kind of made it bitter to kind of play off the sweetness of the lobster, and it worked out really well. People loved it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We had our biggest turnout in the spring. We did over 100 people. We did about 105 people, which means that we raised over $3,000 in scholarship money for the students, which
Fantastic.
Is a lot of fun. Yeah, yeah, it's awesome. You know, we've got such great support in the community for our department, for the restaurant, for our students, and you know, we just keep trying to get better and better and better as chefs. We keep trying to get better as students, and hopefully that translates through the food in the restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around all those different flavors coming together for the lobster, but it sounds like it would work.
I got the same reaction from a lot of people. You know, Chef Gagabach looked at me and said, "You want to do what?" Jablonski looked at me and he said kind of the same thing. He's like, how are you going to make this work? And I just kind of smiled. I said, just watch. I said, just wait and see. And I promise you it'll work. I said, conceptually in my brain, it makes sense. I said, because we have a little bit of bitter in the coffee. We had bitter in the chocolate. And that, I think, was the moment when those guys realized, oh, you see chocolate as bitter. You don't see chocolate as sweet.
Right.
And I said, yeah, and the bitter is going to play off the sweetness of the lobster. And that's kind of when it came together.
And the bass tones that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it really worked out. It was delicious.
So this was your creation?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So I've been really fortunate to work for some very big chefs and have some great experiences. Spent some time in Chicago. I spent some time in Italy. Spent some time out west with a couple of different chefs. And I've been able to bring all of that back here and try and just influence these students as best I can, try to make sure that I'm constantly pushing myself, starting to look a little bit more at some of this avant-garde style of cooking and incorporate a couple of those things into some of the dishes that we do. So, you know, it's maybe a little passe to do spherification, but the students want to learn it, so we'll teach it to them. And foams were popular, you know, 12, 13, 14 years ago, but again, students want to learn it. They want to see it. They want to experience it and be able to say, hey, I know how to do a foam. So we'll show it to them. And, you know, plus it helps keep me on my toes a little bit and make sure that I'm constantly evolving and constantly teaching myself different things.
I had the mint. The mint was part of one of the special dinners, and it was very good. I was looking for like a gallon to take home.
Oh, nice. So yeah, so we've changed a lot. We're we make all of our pastas in house now. That was something that we changed about 4 years ago. We have a couple of beautiful pasta machines back there. We have a traditional roller. We just got a new extruder over the last couple of weeks, so we'll be able to do all different shapes of pasta with different flours, which is really going to help us, you know, take our food truck in a couple of different directions, because we can do whole wheat pastas, we can do quinoa pastas, you know, because again, on that truck, we want to make sure that we're kind of cutting the processed white flour out of it. I'm not sure when, you know, white flour all of a sudden became really bad for everybody to eat. But for me, there's nothing like traditional pasta. It's my favorite. You know, we want to make sure that we're keeping with trends. We want to make sure that we're teaching the students the right basic skills, and making sure that we're giving our guests a great experience too. You know, and that's the hardest part. We have a couple of different customers that we have to serve. We have to serve the students and making sure they're getting the right education, but we have to serve every single person that walks through the door that pays for food, and we're giving them a great experience, and they want to come back and they want to try the next week's menu and the next week's menu, you know. We're like a club, you know. We're not open all year long, but when we are open, it's finding that right way to remind everyone, hey, we're here.
Exactly.
You know, and I've kind of got a big mouth, and so no longer for me is it the, hey, we got this really cool thing, but shh, don't tell anybody. I want to tell every single person that walks by me, hey, we got this really cool student-run restaurant. You know, the students cook all the food. The students are the servers. And not only are they working really hard, but they're learning at the same time. And you know, I would ask our guests, you know, understand that, remember that. Every once in a while, I'll give them a break because they are going to make mistakes, and it's kind of funny to watch, and I get it, you know. It's also frustrating, too, because we want them to learn. And especially in the dining room, I think the students get really nervous having to talk to people, you know, and you'll see somebody who's really just got this great, vibrant personality, and then you put them somewhere where they're really uncomfortable, and all of a sudden they clam up, and they're like, oh, and you're like, oh, see what happened? So we've got a really cool thing happening over here, and hopefully we'll just keep beating our drums and making sure that we're really loud and telling as many people as we can and get as many people in here as possible. You know, the more people that come to the restaurant, the more experience our students get.
Absolutely.
You know, cooking is really about repetition. You know, I don't want to say there's no talent, like, you know, God-given natural talent, but it's really about repetition, right? The more you cook, the better you get.
Sure.
And if I have 100 guests every day for lunch, my students get more opportunity to cook as opposed to, you know, 25, 30.
Right.
You know, but we'll open Geez, we'll open about the middle of September, right around September 19th.
Okay.
And we'll open for 11 weeks straight through just about the middle of December. And each week we'll have a different menu, also, again, centered around regions. So we do two different Italian menus, two different French menus. We'll do an Eastern European menu, cuisine of the Deep South. We do food from Key West. So we're teaching the students not just different cuisines, but also that, you know, cooking techniques don't really change no matter if you're cooking German food or if you're cooking Southern food or you're cooking Mexican food. There's some similarity in the technique behind
right.
it all.
Right.
And with some of this new equipment that we have coming in, this hearth oven and this rotisserie, it'll be kind of fun to see what we do with those and how we take the menus and where we want to go with it. And okay. you know, dining has changed a lot, especially in Detroit. We're starting to see people share food, mm-hmm. which is, I think, really different for Detroiters. You know, everybody is used to going, sitting down, ordering what they want to eat, eating it, calling it a day, going home. But I don't think I've ordered my own meal for about a year and a half now. Everything I've ordered, it's, oh, what are we going to share? You know, and as you look at some of these restaurants that have opened, that's kind of the style that they're not necessarily advertising, but pushing is, you know, things are under $15 and they're smaller portions, but we want everybody to get 5, 6, 7, 8 different dishes and share everything. Mm-hmm. And it gives you an opportunity to taste more flavor profiles, mm-hmm. to experience different things that you might not have experienced before.
Right. Right.
You know, it takes that fear away of ordering something that you wouldn't necessarily order because maybe somebody at the table really likes it.
Right.
And that's their favorite thing in the whole world, like goat cheese that I can't. I get it, and I'll eat it, but if I look at it and I see it, I'm like, man, I just don't really want it. But if somebody else orders it, I'll taste it,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's exciting, and hopefully we're going to be able to bring that style of dining to 50101 here on maybe one or two of the different menus and see how it goes. You know, we've got a very strong contingent of guests who have been with us for a very long time, and as we go through change, they go through change.
Mm-hmm.
And we
mm-hmm.
don't want to alienate them, but we also want to kind of pull them along with us same time.
Yeah,
try this.
I think the first time I saw goat cheese with watermelon, I was kind of taken aback and did try it. And it's actually, I can't get those two flavors in my brain, but in my mouth, they did great things.
Yeah.
We've been talking a lot about students who are 18 plus,
mm-hmm.
and we have some little people coming in the summertime.
We do. We have Camp Henry coming up here in June. Middle school aged kids. I'm fortunate enough to be able to teach the culinary side of it, so it should be a lot of fun. I've been practicing with my kids. I have a 7-year-old son and twin 3-year-old daughters. And so I've been practicing with them, not just in figuring out what kinds of techniques they can learn, but also watching my patients and making sure that I am able to just kind of teach and not get too nervous when they got knives in their hands. But we're really looking forward to it. And again, it's the same kind of deal where they'll be learning through doing. So we'll talk about the different techniques we're going to do that day, and then we'll go in the kitchen and we'll do it. We'll make pizzas. We'll make some pasta. The very last day, that Thursday, the kids, as well as the students, will be working on our brunch buffet, which I believe is June 23rd.
Okay.
So between now and June 23rd, our buffets. So we have an international cooking class in the spring, and again, around that class we have to produce food and we have to sell it in some way or other. So for about the last 10 years now, we've on Thursday mornings from 11 to 1 we've been doing these international buffets. And this year we've already gotten two under our belt. We did a Eastern European our first week. And we had roast beef and pierogi, and, you know, everybody loves that. Last week we did a hog roast with with Hawaiian and Polynesian foods. This Thursday, we're doing food from Italy and France. So we're going to do wood-fired pizzas, very traditional Neapolitan-style pizzas. We actually use a biga in the pizza dough as opposed to using commercial yeast to make the dough rise. So Chef Chris and Chef Click have been diligently feeding and managing a couple of different starters in the back for our bread program. We'll do a pasta station. We've got a couple of Chef Click's friends coming in that are going to teach the students how to do fresh ravioli. Oh. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It'll be really good. The week after, we're doing cuisine of Latin America. So we're going to have a taco station with fish, chicken, and pork tacos. Your choice. You can take as many as you want. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a couple of different soups. We're going to do a couple of different seafood dishes. So that should be a lot of fun. And then one more kind of Northern European. We're going to do like a traditional Swedish smorgasbord style buffet. And then the last one will be a brunch. And on that brunch one will be the one where we've got the kids from Camp Henry in. Hopefully doing really well. We tried it last year and it worked out really, really well. The parents came and they kind of had a kick, got a kick out of seeing their kids actually working hard and being smart in the restaurant and showing some skill and showing some passion. We know that not a high percentage of these kids are going to go on to be chefs. You know, they're in middle school, but you know, to teach them some skills and life skills, I think it's important that everyone knows how to cook one or two things, especially the boys out there.
Right.
You know.
And they may be open to trying things that normally they wouldn't try.
It's true.
So are you still accepting students for Camp Henry?
I believe we are.
Okay.
That goes through MTech over in our continuing education. I think it's the Continuing Education Department.
Okay.
And you can contact them over there, and they have all of the information for Camp Henry.
Okay.
We've been really surprised and really pleased at just how popular that became.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we thought about it and we're like, maybe we'll get, you know, 10 kids. And next thing we know, there was an article that came out like the week after in one of the local papers, and we had people calling up saying, oh no, are you doing it again? Are you doing it again? Are you doing it again?
Right.
So, maybe next year we'll do 2-3 weeks, but it's a lot of work.
So you have 2 weeks.
We have 2 weeks. One is culinary, one is baking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Students can sign up for one or the other or both.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's a lot of fun. They'll have Chef Chris in the baking.
Okay.
And
I think I saw something online too on the HFC webpage.
Yeah, if you go to HFC or henryfordculinary.com, that usually gets you right where
okay.
you need to go.
Okay. All right. Oh my gosh, so much going on.
So much going on. It's
and then
crazy.
New for fall, the equipment you were talking about.
Yep. New for fall, the equipment. We're going to look at some of the different menus. We're incorporating a lot of the same things that these local chefs are incorporating. What we're going to start doing is looking at our menus and using local seasonal ingredient. One of the big things we have going on right now mm-hmm. is we have a production garden on campus.
Okay.
So thankfully, we have a great farmer that I like to call Farmer Ted. That's Chef Chris.
Right.
And he last year produced over 300 pounds of tomatoes that we used in-house. We're growing beets, carrots, greens, all different kinds of lettuces. Everything is natural and organic. Our compost is actually all the vegetable and trim that we create inside the kitchen, so we don't throw anything away. So eggshells, vegetable trim, all gets put into a box. We label it compost, we grind it up, and we feed that soil a couple times a year with that compost. So
okay.
It's been kind of funny because we had naturally produced cantaloupe and cantaloupe and honeydew
mm-hmm.
because we scooped out the seeds and used that in the compost. And as it ground up, some of those seeds didn't grind all the way, so they just naturally produced themselves. And we had cantaloupe and honeydew that we didn't plan on having, but it was a nice surprise.
Yeah, but it tells you how good the soil is.
Yeah, you know, all that vegetable trim and those eggshells that we put in there has really produced an amazing amount of nutrients in that soil. So we're super lucky to have, you know, so much knowledge on campus. And the students, man, they get to see food go straight from seed to being harvested to being prepared to being served. And there's not a lot of programs out there that are doing that. I certainly didn't get that kind of education when I went to culinary school.
Right, right.
And, you know, just to have that garden on campus is huge for us.
And then the other garden, the herbs.
Yep, we have a smaller herb garden down in the little area down there, and we've got one in the back, and we're constantly asking buildings and grounds and the administration for more space to grow more food. One day maybe we'll have our own cow and a couple of chickens
to go with the deer and
to go with all the deer
and the fox, and we
sneak up behind the college now and again to dig out the fresh garlic that grows back there. I've taken the kids out into Heinz to look for morels and look for different things. And we've come up empty handed most times, but you know, we're out there and we're looking for it, and we're teaching, you know, just the availability of what's here.
Sure. Sure. Wow. So much going on. It was great to talk to you too.
Thank you. I never thought that, you know, it would be such an amazing.
We have a lot in common too. What you may not realize is how many students on campus have no idea that there's a radio station on campus.
Yeah.
It's like a restaurant.
It's one of the most frustrating things I think about our department is, like I said, it's been the best kept secret around. We are open fall, winter, and spring. We are open to the general public, as well as the staff and the students on campus here. And, you know, value for dollar, there isn't anyone that can compete with us with the pricing that we have and the quality of food we serve.
Right, right. You know, I can attest to that because I'm there as often as I can be. It's definitely one of my favorite restaurants for so many reasons. The homemade, the non-chemical, the price. I mean, yeah. I can't really argue with that at all.
Yeah, I tend to ask quite a bit, we're selling this for what? You know, like the thing with the scholarship dinner that blows me away is we charge $45 a guest for 8 courses. And we're writing menus that you could easily sell for $100, $125, $150 a seat. And, you know, we're not trying to gouge our guest, but what we're trying to do is give the guest the opportunity to experience these things. And you know, our beer and wine selection is great, and our prices for beer and wine is, again, super valuable.
Right.
So, you know, and we are just here to provide a great experience,
yeah,
not just for the students, but for our guests too.
Definitely. We're down to just about 2 minutes. Can you tell me, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, I apologize for that, but can you tell me your favorite kitchen story, whether it involved an explosion or whether it involved a student or...
yeah, my favorite kitchen story is we opened a restaurant where, let's just say, cost was no concern.
Okay.
Third week on the job, we walked in and there was a hole in one of the deep fryer hoses.
Oh.
And it caused a fire, and like the fire was spitting out of the wall, and it set the ANSO systems off. And so we were cleaning that mess while we were trying to open, and it was a bad day. It was a really bad day. Another one of my best friends, who's a pastry chef, called me on a Saturday morning and said, there's a lot of water in the kitchen on the line. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, it's coming out of the ceiling. And I said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, it's like gallons and gallons and gallons of water just like flowing out of the ceiling. And I said, well, what do you mean? And then he started taking pictures, and it was like a waterfall coming. Apparently a water main in the building had broke,
oh,
and it was just leaking into the, and it wasn't a small leak. It was huge. It was bad. But, you know, there's always something. You never really know what's going to happen on any given day.
Absolutely.
You've got to make sure that you know how to fix things. You got to make sure that you're prepared for anything. Yep. We missed a fish delivery one year. Our fish purveyor came from Chicago overnight, and my vendor called me and he said, "Listen, you're not getting your fish." I said, "Why not?" He said, "Well, driver hit a patch of ice and spun out and the truck flipped over." I said, "Is driver okay?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, where's the fish?" He said, "Well, it's probably in the snow on the side of 94. I said, "Great, I'm driving out there." I said, "And I'm going to take whatever I can find." And he's like, "No, don't do that."
Did you?
No, it was too far away. It was like 2.5 hours. We didn't have the time to do it. But we thought about it. We thought about sending our sous chef.
That's what they're for.
Exactly.
Oh, Joe, this has been great. Thanks so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. And so many great things going on both places, at the radio station and in the kitchen, just kitty corner from us. Oh, my gosh. Well, Chef, thanks so much for being here. And this was a great edition of Foodies on the Fifth. Thank you again. And thank you all for tuning in to Foodies on the Fifth, the show about all things culinary. And there's an emphasis on Henry Ford. But we can talk about all kinds of things, like fish on the freeway and fires in the kitchen.
Yeah, why not,
and,
right?
And, yeah. The views and opinions expressed on Foodies on the Fifth are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.